Hello everyone, my name is Philippe and this is the podcast Life with AI, the podcast that we talk about artificial intelligence in a simpler way. And for today's episode, I'm here with Sergey, and we're gonna talk a lot about NLP, like he's a machine on NLP. I was telling him that I already talked about him in the podcast. If you listen to the episode that I was talking about some tips on interviews, and there is a very good guy that interviewed with me, it's him. And now let's extract the most of his brain. So yeah, Sergey, you can present yourself.
Well, what a fun introduction. I guess this is one of the best ones I ever got. But hello everybody, my name is Sergey. I was working in NLP for the last 3 years, starting from international companies like JetBrains and others, and now I'm working in a French startup which is called NewMind. We're making the no-code NLP platform for which would allow people to easily do classification, entity recognition, and soon information extraction models just in a simple no-code manner by touching the buttons and interacting with a really simple interface.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk a lot about named entity recognition. That is they have the actual state of the art on named entity recognition. And well, maybe to start the conversation, talk what you say, what you know about NLP, what people should know, and then we go deep into it.
So basically, I think a really interesting trend in NLP is that usually you don't create your models from scratch, but rather you start from a model which was already created, which has a certain understanding of the language structure, and so on, and then you build on top of it. So, well, you all heard about the transformer models, which are discussed like crazy today, and there are certain pre-trained transformer models. So the smaller ones are called, for example, Bert, Roberta, and so on. If you're French, it's called Camembert, but yeah. usually it has some kind of bird.
We have one in Brazil right now. It's called Sabia. It's a bird.
Yeah, I was trying to say that all of them usually have bird, but I guess not yours, right? But yeah, and the bigger ones, bigger transformer models, which are usually run on GPU clusters, which are usually called like LLMs right now, which are bigger transformers like Llama, I guess Mistral, Falcon, and some other ones. And so all of those models, you usually use them to start building from them. And I think this is a really interesting characteristic of NLP in comparison to a more traditional machine learning, where you develop like logistic regression, decision trees, and other algorithms kind of from an absolute zero.
Yeah, and it's also nice that like on NLP and also computer vision and so on, we want to learn a word representation of this kind of data. So like I don't know if you saw this video of I don't know if it was Elijah or Greg from OpenAI explaining what is next token prediction and what it gives to the model. Did you watch this video?
I'm not sure.
No, it's an amazing one. Like it was from 2 weeks ago. I can send you later and I can put in the description of the episode. But they were explaining that by predicting the next token, we are not only learning the distribution of the text, but also the way humans think, the way we process information and we communicate this information. So it's really like, of course, they were saying in a fancy way, but it's kind of a word representation that the model is learning.
Yeah, exactly. I have a lot of friends who are not techie, and they often, because they know I'm working with also a bit of large language models, they ask me, Sergey, why if I tell ChatGPT this question is really important for my life, it starts giving better responses? And well, I have to always say, I mean, I guess because of the way people think and the text there is.
Yeah, so funny. Okay, so now if you want to go for named entity recognition, that is your main area of study right now, can you explain the problem and then we can go deeper?
Yeah, exactly. So imagine you're a student, you know, you wrote some notes on the paper and now you want to highlight something in it. You have just a marker. So named entity recognition is a task where you have a text and you have several markers. Each marker corresponds to some kind of information you want to extract. So for example, if you're an insurance company and you have an A4 sheet, you'd like to extract, let's say, a person name, a security number, and perhaps person email. And so you would have computer receive the raw text and ask to find those information, which is, for example, person name, phone number, and email in this paper. And so the task is basically classifying each word into categories, which user can predefine. In this case, it can be a person, can be an email, and so on. So you do not modify the text, but rather inside the text, you highlight certain information by doing the perhaps word classification.
A nice way of explaining named entity recognition with the marks. And what is also interesting to know, because he said about text named entity recognition, there is also multimodal named entity recognition. When you don't have access to the text, and then you apply OCR. So you guys are doing more text named entity recognition. Contev, we are doing more multimodal document intelligence named entity recognition. So for text named entity recognition, as you said, you have many classes and so on, and you said that we come from a pre-trained model. So like, what would be your advice when you face an identity recognition problem? How would you start this problem?
I mean, what's interesting to me is that I think usually when you start some problem, you need to start with some kind of model. And actually, models are created from some kind of data sets. And when you come to any entity recognition model, you might want to extract, if you want to extract something, I guess, more weird and not the typical person name, location, and stuff like this, it's really difficult to find a data set which contains even some examples of this data. And so, realistically speaking, for entity recognition, probably there are not many models you can start with rather than the usual BERT or really, really naive modifications of BERT fine-tuned on for some entity recognition tasks on only a few classes. Of course, there are some more advanced data sets, but in our experience, while those data sets who contain a lot of classes are good on paper, they are on a narrow domain like Wikipedia, so your model doesn't really generalize on the real-life data that well. So realistically speaking, start creating any entity recognition model with low amount of data is super challenging because there is no that good starting point, which there is for usual classification task and so on. And we, as a company, as a new mind, we try to fix this problem with our open source model. So basically, our model was pre-trained on a huge, diverse, vast amounts of data coming from different domains, having a lot of different classes to solve entity recognition for them, for these documents. And in our experience, if you just start with our model, for example, in comparison to a usual Roberta or another model you can find on the internet, usually for the same number of examples, as long as it's not like, you know, thousands, but let's say 20, 40, 60, 5, and so on, you have like 3-4 times data efficiency of the model. So in order to get to the same quality, you need to label much less examples.
Yeah, well, and how did you train this model?
So basically, I think that NLP had always a problem of being super difficult to obtain data for. So in computer vision, there was a huge community who was trying to get some classification data sets and so on. There was a lot of research, while in NLP, I think there were much more basic tasks in the first place. And the community also kind of shifted their focus from perfecting, let's say, the model of a small size to creating the model of a bigger size.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, in computer vision, they had, let's say, ResNet 50, which was a good model to start from, a small yet super intelligent model. Then each year there was a new version, EfficientNet V2 and so on, where people for the same amount of computed parameters made the model more intelligent. While and this kind of allowed them also to be more data efficient and so on. While in NLP it never happened. In NLP there was a BERT, Roberta, and basically that's it. There was no iteration. Then they started working on models like T5, which received a natural language and tried to output natural language.
Maybe explain the difference, like BERT and Roberta, they are encoder only models. T5, they are sequence to sequence, that is encoder decoder, and GPT, they are decoder only.
Exactly. So BERT kind of receives the text and outputs the embeddings. The T5 receives the text and outputs the text. The same goes for GPT. They are working internally a bit differently, but in terms of interface, they're the same.
What is interesting to explain is that the input is keep in the encoder part, and then it goes through cross attention, and only what you decode goes as an autoregressive in a sequence to sequence, that is encoder decoder. And why you do decoder only like GPT, both the input and the decoding output of autoregressive goes to the decoder part. So that's mainly the difference.
And also for LLMs, it's easier to train them.
Yeah,
because when you separate those two parts, if you have like model which is sequence to sequence, you have to do it iteratively. While LLM, you can say that, let's say we have 5 tokens, predict number 6. Let's say we have 10 tokens, predict number, predict the next step, and so on. So you can, inside one batch, you can have basically this kind of triangle matrix where you're trying to predict the next token. But anyways, what I was trying to say is that in NLP, the focus was shifted from creating a better models, which can be practically used by people, to creating a more outstanding, yet more difficult to use models, because they require more compute and thus can be less used worldwide. They cannot be as widespread. And so I think that a really interesting revolution we all know about called ChatGPT came recently, and it affected NLP a lot, in my opinion. Because before, there was not really an easy way to get a diverse labeled data. But now you can ask ChatGPT to do a lot of things. It would do it with a really high quality, and it's really easy to ask ChatGPT to do something because they have an API endpoint which is always running. So I think that GPT is a really important step to creating new models. And the way we used it is that we tried to kind of simulate the typical process of training entity recognition model, but as if we had more classes. So let's say we have some sentence. For example, Philippe invited Sergey on the podcast, right? And And as a human, if you know what entity you want to extract, you may say extract person or stuff like this. GPT can handle this. But the problem is that if we ask ChatGPT to extract, let's say, person and, for example, address, it's going to be the model which you're going to train on this data is going to be super limited to only two classes you ask it to extract. So we made a step further. We ask, could you please extract anything which looks like an entity? So then, from the same example, the model would extract, once again, if Philippe invited Sergey on his podcast, which he publishes on Spotify, then the model would extract our names and, for example, Spotify as an entity. And because of this...
And podcast also as an entity.
Perhaps. I mean, it depends on who you ask, but yeah. And with the addition to extracting those information from a text, we also just ask ChatGPT to please tell me, how would you call this class? So Sergey and Philippe can be a person, for example, or a person name. Spotify can be a company. And
podcast could be like an activity.
Yeah, an activity. And for also, in addition to, for each extracted part, in addition to label, we also ask for a description. So for example, a Spotify can be a company which operates in a music and audio industry, which tries to make the access to this kind of information easier. And so basically what's happened is that I just told you that from a simple sentence, Philippe invited Sergey to his podcast, which will be out on Spotify. ChatGPT was able to deduct what entities are there, tell their labels, and describe them also. And this information, while it's not the usual kind of information we train for entity recognition, this can be somehow adjusted for it. So in usual entity recognition, we have four classes, for example. We know the amount of classes we're going to train on in advance. Those can be, for example, a person name, organization, and address. While if we ask ChatGPT to name the classes for us, the problem is that ChatGPT can generate infinite amount of classes.
Yeah.
It can come up with a strange class, like, I don't know,
yeah,
vegetable.
I saw the blog that in the end you have one example class that are like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. And this is not really a data you would be able to incorporate in the usual training process. Moreover, if you ask ChatGPT to label something, let's say the same example, Philippe invited Sergey to a podcast. ChatGPT may, if we rerun the ChatGPT several times throughout the sentence, Philippe can be a podcast host, it can be a person, it can be a friend, it can be a leader, or it can be described with some other word.
Mm-hmm.
And so, realistically speaking, we do not have any guarantees that our number of classes is going to be limited, even if we have extraordinary narrow text in terms of the amount of entities there are.
Uh-huh.
Because the same object can be called differently depending on the perspective you look at it.
Yeah.
And so, because of this, it wasn't really possible to say, let's say we have 300 classes and let's classify over them. Because for the same sentence, Philippe can belong to a class person and class podcast host.
Yeah.
So this is a fundamental contradiction on the training level because, well, this model probably would not converge.
Yes.
Because it doesn't know which one to choose. It cannot choose both. And we cannot choose both because, well, it's going to be so unstable in terms of the gradients and so on that it's going to collapse. And so what we did is we tried to concatenate the label and the description, meaning that we can concatenate the podcast host or like Spotify is the extraction part. The label is music service and the description is, let's say, audio service. We would concatenate the music service and the description together. We would encode it into the vector. And for each token, which we would get the embedding of with the bird, we would calculate the pairwise similarity of this token with this vector token, with the vector we got from the description part. So we try to...
So you're basically aligning the embedding space of the token that is like a person with the description of what is a person.
Of the
embedding.
Class. Exactly.
Amazing.
So because of this, we solve the problem of the fact that there are unlimited amount of classes because the classes now are encoded into the embeddings. And also, even if we have like a batch size of 5, maybe, okay, let's talk firstly on the sentence level. If we have a sentence where we didn't extract a certain entity, it would not be a problem because we're comparing a pairwise similarity and classifying over only the descriptions which we were able to find.
And what do you do with the other tokens, like and you just don't count the loss of it?
Yeah, exactly. So look, for example, let's look at the example of, imagine the same example, but we missed the Spotify. The good thing is that what we would have the podcast host, remember, the person, and perhaps the name of the podcast as the classes. The Spotify would be learned to be further from person, podcast host, and podcast.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. And we, although we skipped the annotation of the Spotify, we still improve the quality for the Spotify. Yes. So if we also had an annotation for Spotify being a musical service, we would improve it even further with making it closer to music service. But realistically, even if we skip some annotation, which GPT often does, we're not even losing any amount of meaningful information in terms of training. We don't have any contradictions like we had before.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem for us is when GPT says that something is entity, which is not.
Uh-huh.
But if it skips something, it's perfectly okay for
it. And did you evaluate the quality of this data set later out? If it skipped a lot of stuff?
It did skip some stuff. But in our experience, what really matters is that if the model trained on top of our foundation model skips a lot. And turns out that for the most important classes, which are like probably top 300 we had in our training data set, it's actually really good. So even though it skipped them sometimes, overall, it's absolutely not a problem. So for some weird classes, like perhaps, I don't know, a brand of sneakers or stuff like this, it may have some problems. But overall, for the 95% of use cases, it's absolutely exceptional. And even on the more rare use cases, which are not really widespread, it's much better than what we were using as an industry in the industry before this model.
But this idea of doing the use the contrastive laws in the end, right?
So something like this.
Yeah. But the idea of using these contrastive laws is amazing, because the example that you just gave, like missing or not like a sneakers brand, the fact that it's a sneakers brand that you might have a sneakers brand, you might have like a clothes brand, or you might have a parfum brand, and then the model will also learn that all of them are brands, but the subject is different. Like, so that's amazing. Yes.
Exactly. And the same, coming to the same example, if you are in this interview, if you are a podcast host, a person and a friend and a leader, because the same sentence can be annotated differently, or you as a person can be annotated differently depending on the action you do, it also gives a smaller model which we train, which is like a bird kind of model, understanding that actor, podcast host, person, friend are all the characteristics and labels which are attributed to a person. And so there is an additional level of information we gain because of kind of the fact that we ask ChatGPT to label the data in a manner it wants, rather than saying that please use person, class, location, because this ability to let it do whatever it wants allows us to actually better generalize, and it's exceptional.
No, it's amazing the work that you've done. And well, so after you trained this model, you guys published on Hugging Face. Thanks a lot. And we're gonna probably use it one day. The problem is that we are in a medical domain, so for us, I think it is still a bit better to take like a pre-trained PubMed Roberta. But we're gonna probably try to see if your model can beat. Also, you published in, did you publish the multi-language one?
I'm sorry,
did you publish the multi-language one or only the English one?
Yeah, exactly. So one important thing, coming back to the topic of importance of ChatGPT for natural language processing, is that ChatGPT is multilingual. So you can do the same model, you can create the same model I just described to you in any language. If you avoid putting the English sentences and replace them with Portuguese sentences, for example, and ask to do the same task, ChatGPT is gonna do it. Maybe perhaps the quality of the data would be a bit poorer, but it's still gonna be much better than probably 90% of the open source models out there. And so we did publish the multilingual model. It's trained on most of the European languages, which are widespread. So to name a few, it's German, French, Italian, Spanish, English, and Portuguese. Much, much more. Portuguese also, and much more. Polish and Russian and some other ones. So you feel like you need a good backbone, which was trained not on the Wikipedia, unlike most of the models, but on some more real-life text, then you might give it a shot.
Yeah, so the name of the model, of course, I'm going to put in the description, but the name of the model, what's the name?
So you go on Hugging Face in the token classification section of models section, and you just write New Mind. It's the name of our company, so it's NU Mind, two letters and like Mind. And there are two models, English one and multilingual one. The English one is probably closer to the top of the first page. It was number one for like a month already, I think, maybe less. The multilingual one was top two for like 2 weeks, but now I think it's a bit below because I guess people didn't really use it a lot for it to stay there. Yes, there were not that many.
I think that the problem about multi-language is that normally you need a specific language. Like, you don't need a multi-language for the same problem.
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't say so, because many of our clients, they don't want to have a separate model for English document and a French document. So there is, I mean, I'm not sure if you're supposed to do machine learning like this, but there's certainly, I mean, it's a good idea if model allows it, and our model definitely allows it. But generally speaking, there are some clients which we face that actually want to have one model for everything. Just like, you know, ChatGPT, which you just plug in and no use.
Did you do like an analysis on the performance, if it's good?
We try to train the same model on one language, let's say French, separately, and on German separately. And we try to train it on both German and French. And so what we hoped is that if we train together, the performance is going to be at least an average of those two trained separately mm-hmm. or better.
Mm-hmm.
It means that the model can generalize better and learn better from two languages being together. And actually, we observed that on average, it's about the same or a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So realistically speaking, if you combine two languages, it works really well. Mm-hmm. If you combine three, well, I'm not sure, but for two, it works really well. And what's important is that in our experiments, we didn't really fine-tune the model. We just used logistic regression. So mm-hmm. the model was frozen and the features were used for a really weak machine learning algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And even with this machine learning algorithm, it was able to properly work on the concepts with the same quality independently of the language.
Cool. Which means that the embedding space is really well learned.
Really well learned. Exactly.
Yeah. Just to tell people, guys, the most important thing about deep learning is learning a good embedding representation. Like all the models, even the code neurons, in the end, it's an embedding representation that it's giving to make the prediction of it.
Exactly.
The token. And apparently you guys did learn a very good representation of the embedding. And maybe to give also like how to use this model, it's not only named entity recognition, you can also use it for few shot learning or zero shot learning actually.
I mean, basically our model is a bit special because usually when you go to the model on Hugging Face, if it's in classification section, for example, or in feature on token classification section, it can already solve something. Our model is a bit different. So our model doesn't have an output in a traditional manner. It's not a classifier, it's not a word classifier, but rather it's a feature extractor, meaning that you put the text and for each token in the text, you have the vector for it. So our model outputs an embedding for each word and not, for example, class for each word like traditional token classification models. But to use our model, you use it as a foundational model and then you put either linear layer on top and you fine tune, or you can put logistic regression. And logistic regression in our case actually works exceptionally well. We even made some experiments and in our Hugging Face page, we found a really cool set of parameters which allows logistic regression to have like 3% more performance, which is basically for free.
Cool. And the one thing that you already did is that including also the embedding space of like the -4 layer improves the result.
Exactly. This is true for logistic regression because when training our model, we actually found out that if we don't train it fully, but rather keep some knowledge from the original BERT model, which saw the internet, we have better performance. And this makes sense because BERT was trained on, gigabytes of data. Well, our data set was around 1 million, a bit less. And obviously you cannot, even though you're specialized on some task, you cannot cover all the domains to such extent as the Wikipedia and Shakespeare covered in there, like, and the other data sources covered while creating the BERT.
Cool. Well, do you have anything else that you would like to talk? Because I have some specific questions on named entity recognition.
I mean, one thing I wanted to say is that several minutes ago, you said that indeed, the most important thing is being able to have the model, which has a really good embeddings inside, trains a really good embedding understanding and so on. This is exactly the reason why in NLP and in computer vision, nobody starts from scratch. Every model you create is based on something. If you're not doing a breakthrough research, then you start with BERT or some other model, perhaps even large language model, and you don't start building something from scratch and you fine tune it.
Mm-hmm.
This is exact explanation why this is really important to start with something that was already trained because you need much less data and you're going to have a relatively robust model in comparison to creating something you will create yourself.
Yeah. And well, in computer vision, you computationally speaking, you can train your model from scratch, but on NLP, it's almost impossible with the size of models that we have today. Like the amount of data that you need to... maybe one interesting point is like why it's almost impossible to pre-train, to train from scratch, like a large language model or BERT, is because there is no inductive bias in those models. So the model needs to learn the inductive bias from scratch, while in CNNs, there are a lot of inductive bias in the architecture. So it's easier to the model, which is also an explanation of why CNNs is way easier to train against a VIT model. We are not doing computer vision, but so now let's go for the specific questions. Named entity recognition. Is it better to train a model using, the BI representation?
Exactly.
So let's explain to people. BI representation is that because a token is less than a word. So imagine that you have the token, the word Sergey. Sergey would be the token Sir and the token Gay. This was not a good one, but anyways, you guys understood.
This is example I give a lot.
I didn't realize it would be like, but anyways, so the first token, there are two ways of representing it. Either the first token is person, like it's person's name, and the second token is doesn't matter, you skip this one. Either the first token is like initial of the beginning of the person's name, and the second token is intermediate mediate of person's name. So there are these two ways of representing text on named entity recognition. This is very specific to people that have already done it, like really specifically and technically. But as I have an expert here, I'm asking the question. So which one is better? Why? Or is it the same?
So there are, in fact, there are even more. There is only like when you label each word, if it belongs to a class or not, then you can separate it, each class into begin and continuation.
Uh-huh.
Meaning that when you begin a new instance of the class, you would start with a begin label and then you would do a continue.
Okay.
Then you can also do end, which is begin, continue, end. And also there is a next one where you also have a special label, which means that this is entity of this class and it consists only of one token. So instead of doing begin end or begin continue end, you would just say let's call this name, let's call it D. You'll say D, which means that it's entity of this class and it is only one token.
Okay.
So if let's say I don't know, Philip is one token, then it would be labeled as D because it doesn't have begin, it doesn't have an end, but rather it's represented with only one.
So you would token. Have four different tokens for each label.
Yeah.
D,
I mean,
B,
I'm not sure if it's called
C,
D, but it's
yeah,
just,
yeah, makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, in my opinion, those things are really important. Yeah, like the choosing the best notation is important, yet unimportant at the same time, because it depends on your priorities as a business, as a company, and so on. Because if you want to do only class labels, then the adjacent names
mm-hmm.
can be merged into one when extracting. When you are doing also with the begin, end, and continuation, those will be separate. But realistically speaking, I mean, while there are some differences, those are not like 5% differences, and
mm-hmm.
usually it comes down to what you need. If you want to indeed understand where's the word, the beginning of the word, the end of the word, or if you are fine with perhaps merging several different words of the same class into one, I mean, it depends on your precise requirements. So I wouldn't say there is a huge difference, it's just you decide which one is more useful. But you should understand that if you have a data set where the labels are of those four types, which is like begin, end, continuation, and single token, you can always convert it to a most naive notation.
Yes.
Whereas like just the class, no class. But if you have a usual notation like class, you cannot usually convert it to the difficult location because you know where the spaces are in between mm-hmm. the entities of the same class if they're adjacent to each other.
So the performance of the model, you didn't see any big difference between the different annotations?
I mean, basically what we do and what we think is that so far, in most of the use cases, usually you don't really have a problem with merging two adjacent things together.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I told you, many of the people treat this technology as a marker, kind
mm-hmm.
of, which highlights. And so if you highlight a space in between them or no, is it really important?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the times, no. And from a perspective of our model, I'm pretty sure that during our benchmarking, we kind of excluded all the begins and we're just trying to benchmark to see how good it is at representing classes.
Mm-hmm.
Because from my perspective, our contribution, while currently we're also benchmarking on tasks where you need to find the segment in the beginning and the end,
mm-hmm.
we found out that mostly, firstly, finding the borders between the word is not important. And yet mm-hmm. our model is better at finding the borders of the span than the usual bird, which was not pre-trained for this task.
Ah, cool. So like you were able to do kind of question answering, that is just finding the beginning and the end with the named entity recognition.
No, I'm just saying that if we were to do named entity recognition in a BI schema,
uh-huh.
where there's like beginning and continuation, and you separate the tokens with begin,
mm-hmm.
it's still much better than usual BERT model, mm-hmm. using the BERT model. But I'm not sure that this is what most people actually need. I think mm-hmm. mostly people just need to convert it to the simplest notation.
And label and minus
yeah, exactly.
100.
Probably, I think so.
Just minus 100 is because minus 100 is not considered in the loss computation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think that's most of my questions. Do you have something else to say?
I mean, honestly...
Maybe an advice to people also.
Yeah, I think usually something I was a strong advocate of is the data quality. I think that in NLP, at some point, people were trying to scale the model or come up with a really cool techniques on how to get extra several percent from the performance. I really think that sometimes in NLP, people forget about data quality. And if you create an algorithm, if you put in trash, you're going to get trash.
Mm-hmm.
So just my observation is that if you want to create good models, I think firstly, you need to start with a high quality data or think of the way how you can remove the bad effects of the bad data and create a model. And only then start improving it with some cool tricks. Because I think that if your model is exceptional with the simplest methods, means that your data is good. And there is also there's a lot of space to improve it further. While if your model sucks on the most basic basic algorithms, then maybe it's a data problem and you should definitely focus more on the data and avoid reading fancy papers which allow you to get extra percent.
Yeah, or using Roberta instead of BERT. Actually, it does help because Roberta is a bit better, but it's not what's going to change.
In our experiment, Roberta is 1% better, but once again, doing a better data is 5%
better. Yeah, that's the point.
I mean, those kind of changes, like changing foundation model, in my opinion, they should be done because they are super fast to check.
Yeah.
But everything beyond that, with like involve where you read papers and do some other code writing, is usually not as efficient and is more like final few percents in comparison to 99% or like 95% of the total performance you're gonna get from having the best data set possible.
Yeah. Well, and maybe an advice, instead of using BERT or Roberta, use their checkpoint that is better than both.
If you're doing token classification, and if you're using some sentence classification tasks, we also released our model, which is exceptionally good for sentiment analysis. Mm-hmm. So if you are doing some sentiment analysis, either you understand if the text is negative or positive, or if you want to understand what they say in the review, are they happy or not, or something adjacent to this, also try using our model because it's much better than the existing models which are there right now.
Cool. And everything is open source, so and you can use commercially.
Yes, exactly. So it's an MIT license, so you can do whatever you want. You can modify, you can use it in your product. We're going to be very happy if you do.
Great. Well, so thanks a lot for coming, Sergey. It was a very nice conversation. And so don't forget to follow the podcast, guys, on social media. On Instagram, we are podcast.lifewithai. And on LinkedIn, we are lifewithai. And now we're going to eat some risotto. And see you next time.
See you. Thank you.